Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And welcome to the Raw Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture. Michael Hamflett enjoying a well-earned long weekend to review everything that happened on Monday Night Raw. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review Raw and SmackDown, but also NXT, AEW Dynamite, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and round of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, they're joined by Sidgwick to review Monday Night Raw, and neither of us are really looking forward to doing this, are we?
We spent the 2 minutes before pressing record on this Zoom call just like in despair. I don't want to do this. I hated watching this show. I really don't want to do this. It's so unworthy of analysis. It's just utterly dreadful, repetitive content. They've called it WrestleMania Backlash, and because everything changes week to week and they get tired of everything they do because they know it's as rubbish as everybody else, it's not even like WrestleMania feeling anymore. Like, Riddle's not having a match with Sheamus. Drew McIntyre's not having a match with Bobby Lashley. God knows what's happening with women. Who cares? So they have called this show WrestleMania Backlash, and it barely feels like anything that resembles WrestleMania, and yet it never feels like anything's been advanced. Two more things to say in general before I phone this bastard of a podcast in, right? Before I lose my appetite to bury it, because I'm kind of on it here. Two things. One, we're having like trouble with our beautiful three-year-old Charlotte, and that she's incredibly willful, and she has at various points her own way of doing things and what she wants to do and what she wants to wear, and she'll change her mind. Just incredibly irrational but normal three-year-old stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like a puzzle to solve. So how do I solve this puzzle? It's like, it's worse than the bloody water temple in Ocarina of Time in terms of like, how do I get the solution? What's the solution here? It's so difficult. And it's just like a hard thing to do. I'm not meant to get this exact same feeling in my escapism. I'm not meant to ask questions. According to, I think it was Warren Hayes who tweeted this, this week's Raw marked the fourth consecutive week in which there has been a 2-on-1 handicap match. What happened last week? Adam Pearce said, I'm going to have a 2-on-1 handicap match. Drew McIntyre, you need to find a partner. And the partner, it's like, oh, Strowman, right? Okay. This week, the exact Braun Strowman just has a handicap match, and Pierce is nowhere to be found saying, no, that's not allowed, because what was not allowed last week is allowed this week because Vince McMahon has soup for a brain at this point, it feels like. I mean, people throw around adverbs at things in a bid to capture just how good or bad something is. Like, it's extremely good. It's woefully bad. That sort of thing. There's only one adverb you can stick in front of this goddamn Raw, this episode, and everything they've done in 2021, which is somehow worse than everything they did in 2020. In 2019, wasn't exactly halcyon days. Irredeemably awful.
Yeah.
I'm not being hyperbolic, Wilborn. There's not a single thing on this show that I think people without a donkey brain could like say, like, how could you possibly like this? What could you possibly anticipate? What could you possibly like about this show? It's irredeemable. I hate it. I hate it. And it's like, there are odd weeks. And I tell you, this is the absolute bare minimum for a wrestling promotion that happens to contract the services of really talented wrestlers. The bare minimum is that you get a good to very good match. This didn't have that. Irredeemable.
There was a bit I saw somewhere online. There was a bit on this show. Where is it here? Where, I'm not joking, about 50 minutes went by before there was any, like, the second wrestling. But I think it was the second hour. There was 50 minutes, I think something like that, with no actual wrestling match. Inexcusable. 54 minutes, that was it, till we got RK-Bro Riddle, RK-Bro versus Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin. I went online today because I was like, this has got to be some... I mean, we've passed it a long time ago, but I was so disgusted with everything that happened on this show. I was like, some people have got to finally realise this is so bad. And I went online and there was people going, we need to get rid of Adnan Virk on commentary. We need to get the good, you know, Tom Phillips back. I don't know why they replaced him. And I was like, say what you like about Adnan Virk. Like, not a huge fan of his. But then again, I wasn't a huge fan of Tom Phillips either. They're kind of interchangeable. You're worrying about the wrong thing here, guys. Like I always say, you're rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic, except this is a Titanic that's hit the iceberg, but refuses to sink inexplicably. I was like, it's not the commentary. I mean, it is, but like I say, it's also what they're having to commentate on. It's so bad, segment after segment. And like you say, you think you're going to get reprieves with the wrestling, and they all have bollocks finishes. It was just...
As you said, inexcusable, that's a great one, and irredeemable. Together, we've arrived at the correct answer. On Adnan Virk, very quickly, as you said, he's interchangeable. And the thing is, it's like it's been happening for years and years and years. For years and years and years and years now, we've been told or patronised that, you know, give these guys a bit of a respect. You know, they do a very hard job. And the subtext of that is... everyone involved in WWE, past, present, and future, because it's not going to get any better, is essentially saying, look, the commentary sucks because Vince McMahon wants it to suck. And basically, it's a high-pressure role, and these guys do the best that they can under the circumstances. They're telling on themselves. Everyone who works there says, yeah, they've got a hard job, but it's, you know, it's commendable of them to get through these barked instructions, this inorganic, slick, Segway work. I hate everything. Please get on with it so we can finish this.
I watched UFC at the weekend, right? And they've got the three that they had was John Anik, who's the sort of play-by-play. Joe Rogan's obviously color, and DC, who's, you know, another sort of color with giving you even more experience from being in the ring. And they sometimes have Dominic Cruz on there. I think they're a great commentary team. They're obviously clearly good mates outside of the show, etc., etc., and they all bring something to the table. I think you could transpose them to Monday Night Raw and it wouldn't change a lick of difference. Like, I think they're great, but at the end of the day, you've got a 70-odd-year-old bloke yelling instruction. Get excited! He's doing a running power slam! Sell it! I would feel a bit sorry, I've got to be honest, for Adnan Virk, because he's pure, like, those commentators...
He's getting paid a decent amount of money, man.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get on with this show, which started, you know, and you just go... here we go. Show starts. We get a recap, of course, of what happened over the last few weeks. And then T-Bar and Mace, who are keeping their names from... Yeah, yeah! And even though they're not part of that group anymore and they've lost their masks, they've just got face paint on now. And they're just spouting their usual bollocks about extinction. And then...
Rules by any other name would still sound like a dickhead. So it doesn't matter if they're called T-Bar or Dickhead or Dijakovic or Madden or whatever.
So they come out and then you think, okay, right, they're starting with the match. They're actually giving us the match they advertised. They're starting with that. They go to Gorilla. Braun Strowman goes, where's my thank you then? Where's my thank you for saving you last week? McIntyre says, I didn't need your help. Braun Strowman calls Drew McIntyre a kid. We haven't even got time to get into the how wrong that is. But anyway, Strowman went, oh, bollocks, I don't need you. I'll beat them both by myself. Walks out, grabs a mic and goes, nah, we're having this as a handicap match. And then it just was. It went like 3 minutes.
Went loud last week.
It went 3 minutes. And then guess what? DQ, because they wouldn't stop kicking the crap out of him rather than tagging in and out. So McIntyre
DQ'd
runs out.
DQ'd for kicking too much ass. That's the new phrase, isn't it? DQ'd for kicking too much ass.
Yeah.
This has entered, there's an actual lexicon, Wilborn, that describes how awful WWE is.
And then, so McIntyre
cooking such good pal, main roster, which is an ironic promotion, which is ironic. And now DQ'd for kicking too much ass. Roll up finish. There is a lexicon that people have formed collectively to describe how awful this show is.
So McIntyre runs out to make the save. And I think, all right, this is a very convoluted way, but at least we're going to get this match. And we're going to have Braun Strowman and Drew McIntyre get the victory. And then we can just bloody move on from all this. McIntyre hits a Future Shock DDT. Mace breaks up the cover. Strowman does his charging around the ring thing without the train noise. And whilst he's doing this, McIntyre goes to clothesline T-Bar, who ducks. So McIntyre hits Strowman. And then T-Bar jumps back in the ring. The referee counts to, he's like on nine already, counts to 10. McIntyre gets in too late, count out. That's it. And then Braun Strowman hits Drew McIntyre with fucking power slam. This was the opening bit of the show, for Christ's sake.
And again, it's just, it's so inauthentic. And I don't want to pile on Virk. You know, he's getting paid a handsome fee to be rubbish at this. Like, even more rubbish than a robot. But like, again, it's just so inauthentic. It's running power slam. He didn't run.
Yeah.
Just like, use your actual brain. I understand you're not really allowed to, but, you know, judgment calls at times. Use your actual brain. Both matches were absolutely rubbish, devoid of any personality, drama, anything. Drew McIntyre, who is gunning for the title. It's going to be a triple threat, isn't it, after all this?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
He lost twice in one night. It's just pathetic. It's absolutely pathetic.
So he... immediately after this, storms into Postman Pierce's office. He wants a match with Strowman. And luckily, the main event slot's free. So that's what that's going to go.
It always is, because fundamentally, this show is awful.
Do you reckon when they draw out like the... I know they don't do this, but they draw out the storyboard of the show, and then the main event slot is just a picture of two fingers crossed, like, I hope someone gets into a fight during the next 3 hours.
If WWE was fun or good, I had an idea a while back for like a running gag they could do, where when it's revealed that a top star has requested a match for later in the night, Adam Pearce has to go, right, okay, yeah, you can have it. He knocks on the door of like some random geek who's like lacing their boots and just says, nah, not tonight, Ricochet, not tonight. And if they do this week after week after week, then you might get like a decent comedy character out of it. Like, these are just ideas, you know, ideas.
Just was that, did Jimmy Kimmel used to do something like that, didn't he? He used to say, like, oh, no time for Matt Damon, unfortunately, tonight. And then, no, that'd be great every week. Like, oh, rats, foiled again. It was going to be Drew Gulak versus Ricochet, but we're not going to say that until next week. I like that. Yeah, just ridiculous. Right, we've got Miss TV. John Morrison's there.
Oh, Elias, God, like...
Jackson Ryker. Miz talks about his 24 special, talks about Miz and Mrs., and takes credit yet again for Bad Bunny and his success and his sold-out tour. They're here to do a performance. Elias called Shane McMahon his muse. And then they did, I can't believe I'm going to say this, Hey Hey Hop Hop Unplugged.
Yeah, it's just the same as Nirvana, in it. And I get that's the heat. I get it. I do get it.
So they sing, including Jackson Ryker, they sing and rap and do all that. And thankfully, Damian Priest saves it, comes out, interrupts. He says he wanted to witness it in person, just like he did Bad Bunny kicking Miz's ass at WrestleMania. And he got a surprise. Out came the New Day. Xavier Woods, instead of carrying a trombone or a guitar, he's got a guitar case with him. And he brings it down to the ring. and Priest says something along the lines of, I wanted to reflect what you are, rotten. And Michael Sidgwick, the guitar case, hasn't got a guitar inside.
Got fresh fruit. It's got fresh tomatoes.
They look lovely, didn't they?
They looked, I hate tomatoes. Like, I've got very good taste in food. Like, love all sorts. Really like cooking it. I hate tomatoes. I just can't stand them. I like tomato-based sauces, right? I just don't like the taste of the pulp in the middle. It just repels me. And yet, these tomatoes looked so fresh.
Oh,
so beautiful that I wanted to eat them. They were not, in fact, rotten. They were fresh tomatoes.
I wanted to bite those tomatoes and have that juice dribble down my chin and the seeds go all over my I'm weird with tomatoes as well. I love tomato paste, like you said. I love fresh, ripe tomatoes. I don't like cooked tomatoes.
I'm the opposite.
You know, like they go, oh, do you want a cooked tomato with your fried breakfast? No. Why are you? No, just leave it. Just leave it as a nice little tomato or put it on a pizza. None of this in-between bollocks. Anyway, we're getting off track here because it's Austin's beer bath. It's bloody Milkomania, except it's tomatoes. And John Morrison, the one shining light from this segment, takes a tomato to the dick in one of the most perfect encapsulations of the viewer experience of Monday Night Raw I've ever seen.
My goodness. You know how the old cliche, and it's no less true, is, oh God, I hope my wife... Or when you were younger, God, I hope my parents don't walk in when I'm watching wrestling, right? I really hope they don't. I was honestly like, if my six-year-old son walks in when I'm watching this, he'll think, Dad, what are you watching? This is childish. And I'm not kidding. I watch passively TV shows that he watches on like CBBC or, you know, whatever, like school age stuff that, you know, I'm not going to be able to watch friggin' All Japan 90s on YouTube. I have to watch certain things that he wants to watch. And I'm thinking if he comes in watching this, he's going to think I'm a child. I want to be like a hero to this young man. I want to be like an authority figure, if you like, at times. I want to be taken seriously because if I'm trying to dish out a punishment or try and reason with him, he needs to perceive me as like his elder, as someone he can take seriously, as like a grown-up, you know? And I'm watching this. I can't be seen to be watching it by my six-year-old son.
And then me and Hamlet have done this joke quite a lot recently, but it's like, so it's Priest, Kingston and Woods. And Miz is like, right, okay. I need two partners to take on Priest and his two partners. I'm going to pick Elias. And John Morrison's like, here we go. He's taking his jacket off. Jackson Ryker. What? Why would you pick Jackson Ryker? Anyway,
embodies the values of the company.
At one point, Miz distracts the referee so that John Morrison can rub a tomato in Kingston's face. That was probably the highlight for me in this entire match. Kingston gets his arse handed to him for a long period of time, finally escapes the it kicks. SOS, hot tag to Priest, who runs wild, does some really impressive offense, to be fair. Takes down Elias with a clothesline, hits a spinning kick off the top. Priest gives Miz a broken arrow, tags in Woods. Woods comes off the top and immediately gets hit by a jumping knee by Elias. In the end, though, Priest does a wild flippy dive to the outside, taking out Miz and Morrison. Kingston removes Elias from the ring and Xavier Woods rolls up Jackson Ryker. So that's why he was in the match, to take the pinfall.
Competently worked mid six-man match that I was told expressly through the setup not to give a toss about. It couldn't have been any more frivolous. It couldn't have been any more lame. How could it possibly get excited? They could have had a 4.5-star total over delivery where it's like, Jesus Christ, I can't believe they're letting them do this on Raw. And I would still be in no mood to watch it after that setup. So,
yeah.
God damn it.
We see Sonya Deville. What's she up to? She's walking through the arena. She opens one of the like back door security doors. And Charlotte Flair comes. I thought she'd been suspended indefinitely. $100,000 fine. No, they walk down to the ring. Sonya Deville introduces Flair, as well as Eddie Arango, the referee that Charlotte Flair kicked the crap out of last week that caused her fine and suspension. They show a very dramatic version of the replay of what happened. And Deville said, oh, I thought the punishment you got given by Postman Pierce was a bit harsh. Charlotte apologizes to WWE management, to fans, to the referee for her, quote, childish ways. She said her instinct took over last week. She apologized for manhandling Arango, and he accepted the apology and said, you know what? I didn't see Rhea Ripley's interference. So if I'd seen that, then you would have won the match and not ask her. And so Sonya Deville lifts Charlotte's suspension. She announced she's going to compete later on tonight. Arengo is going to be the referee for that match as well. And then Charlotte, because she's an unbearable heel, says, well, actually, quite like an apology from you, Mr. Referee, for your mistake. He did apologize. She said, quote, good boy. And then she got him to hold the ropes open for her so she could leave. As they walk back through Gorilla, there's Postman Pierce. He's furious, undermining her yet again, as she's been doing on SmackDown. What the hell is she doing? She said, oh, it was all a bit last minute. Sorry about all that. He doesn't believe her. I am partially interested in scheming Sonya Deville and what she's up to, although he's obviously just undermining Postman Pierce, Michael Sidgwick.
I just caught what I look like on the Zoom call, and take a screenshot of this and put it underneath the tweet when we post it. I'm just like, God, who cares about authority figures having a squabble? I couldn't give a toss. Examining the content of Charlotte Flair's promo, at least we're being asked to hate her, because I do.
Yes. I mean, who could possibly invest in anything on Monday? I mean, in WWE, but specifically on Monday Night Raw right now. Like, you'll get this match tonight. You won't actually get this match. I'll change my mind. You're not having a first ever match. In fact, we're not even ever going to give you that. We've completely changed our direction. She's suspended. That's it. $100,000 fine. Actually, no. No, she's not. No, the heel authority figures changed her mind and, completely undercut everything that was decreed on Raw Talk. But hey, make sure you watch that after tonight's show, because I'm sure Sonya Deville's going to have more to say.
This is institutional. It has been for several years. And I hate it now on an entirely new level. There's always that nagging part of your brain when AEW does a stipulation or when AEW books something, you know, the promotion that I actually care about, that's worth caring about. When they implement a stip or they do something that you're not quite sure is going to lead to somewhere successful, or if they have like an off week in terms of like a narrative that more often than not proves itself to get tightened up or whatever. This precise WWE practice is at fault for making you think that AEW is going to do something bad, even when it isn't.
Mm. All I'll say to that is 5 cry laugh emojis. So there you go.
Yeah, okay.
After the break, Postman Pierce is on the phone moaning to someone about Sonya Deville. Strowman comes in. He moans about what happened earlier on with Drew McIntyre. He wants the match. He reminds him that, of course, McIntyre won the triple threat. Randy Orton lost the triple threat. And he was just an innocent bystander in all this. And he deserved to be added to the WWE title picture at Backlash. And said, all right, well, if I beat McIntyre in the main event tonight, make it a triple threat. And Pierce,
what's going to happen?
Pierce isn't sure. And he says, what do you have to ask Sonya Deville first to make it official? And he's like, well, I'm not going to get emasculated here. No one gets emasculated on WWE programming. And so makes it official. Yes, if Strowman wins the match later, it becomes a triple threat. That was followed by Sheamus coming. I can't believe this, right? Yesterday, me and Sid went, I quite like what they did with Sheamus last week. And he did the open challenge, but it's not really an open challenge for the title and blah, 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 blah. And I actually sat here and fantasy booked, oh, maybe it could be like a, you know, an ongoing thing where he wrestles loads of, like, you know, guys that have been forgotten and just gets great matches. And obviously wins and the title's never on the line and blah, blah, blah. And then eventually you said, obviously you establish someone who comes through and, oh my God, maybe Ricochet could actually take the title off him at X pay-per-view or whatever. Why did I think that when they could just do the exact same thing that they did last week? He does his open challenge. He watches highlights of him kicking Humberto Carrillo's head in last week. And then he says, who wants a shot next? Humberto Carrillo comes back out. Sheamus, as he did last week, attacks him before the bell. This time he threw his hat in his face, if I'm not mistaken. But then turned his back on him. Carrillo, as he was berating, I think, the commentators, Carrillo jumped him, sent him out of the ring, drop kicked him off the apron twice, suicide dive, and then Carrillo just left and Sheamus was angry and hoyed a chair about. Thoughts?
I don't want to alarm anybody, but Humberto Carrillo was dead. I don't understand how a single soul with the capacity of memory can get behind this. Humberto Carrillo has been start, stop, pushed, vanished, returns for the odd week here and there. It's impossible to invest in anything he does because I have been brutally bludgeoned with the message, I don't care about him. So when I'm asked to care about him, my only response as a human being and not a goldfish is to go, well, I don't care because you don't. And how dare you? How dare you pretend to care about him for the apparent benefit of my entertainment and investment? Same with Aleister Black. People go, oh, it's great to see him back and this Dragon stuff's better than the other stuff. Is it? Even if it is, I don't think it's going anywhere. So just give us a break or I'll knock you out.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Anyway, Rhea Ripley was interviewed backstage next by Sarah Schreiber. She didn't think that any apology from Charlotte was going to actually be forthcoming or whether she meant any words of it, but she was happy that she got fined $100,000 because money's the only important thing in life. And I can hear Michael Hanfley exploding from over here already. She said, look, our paths will cross again one day. She can worry about all that. I'll worry about being Raw Women's Champion. Right, out came WWE Champion Bobby Lashley, flanked by MVP. Quite a good promo, to be fair. He said he did exactly what he was going to do. He said he was going to do at WrestleMania. Walk in and out as champion, made McIntyre pass out, held his belt high, commanded respect from the fans that were in attendance for the first time in over a year. He's chucking McIntyre aside, but McIntyre is like a piece of gum stuck to his shoe, so he's going to have to beat him again. And then he talked about the fact that he could become a triple threat. MVP wasn't happy. Say, why are you treating your champion that way? Any decision involving Lashley should go through the chief hurt officer of the hurt business, blah, blah, blah. Lashley said it was disrespectful. They talked about, obviously, Lashley could lose the title without getting pinned. He said he could beat both men. Nobody was taking the title from him after it took him 16 years to get it. He planned on walking out of Backlash as a champion. Credit where it's due. Good stuff, this from Lashley.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was pretty good. I still hate the content. I hate all of the content. Delivery-wise, he cut a formidable champion scoop figure. But, you know, at the same time, it's not impossible to book a heel who can just wreck people. They did it with Brock Lesnar for years, so why can't they do it with Bobby Lashley?
I know what you're thinking. When's some more wrestling coming along? We haven't had a wrestling match in quite some time. The Carrillo-Sheamus thing wasn't a wrestling match. It was just a brawl. No. More time for more talking backstage, in fact, because Patrick is interviewing Riddle backstage. He's talking about beating Randy Orton the last week and snakes and stoner bollocks, blah, blah, blah. Orton comes in. Orton says, look, I don't know what planet you're from. And Riddle goes, Earth. and Orton said, well, anyway, We've got nothing in common, you and I. Rilla went, well, we're both from Earth. And he went, shut up. Just shut up. But he said, look, I underestimated you last week. And as we all know, RK Bro is indeed a catchy name. And he said, you know what? Let's have a tag team match together tonight. Riddle was
I remember that from WrestleMania, so I'm looking forward to whatever they do at WrestleMania Backlash. I mean, I don't want WrestleMania Backlash, but it's just funny how it's just not WrestleMania Backlash at all.
I couldn't believe the fact that Andy told me on the news this morning that the original plan was for Riddle to retain. I was like, sorry? One of the dumbest decisions you could have made. But anyway, RK Bro is a catchy name. Let's have a tag match. Riddle's jazzed. He wants snakeskin matching speedos. Orton says, he doesn't say anything. He just sort of went, just calm down. It's just an audition. They'll talk again if the match went well. And then they went to prepare for facing off against two goobers, I assume. No one important, clearly. It's the first match back together. More backstage stuff. This time it's Nia Jax, Shayna Baszler and Reginald. Nia Jax is ranting and raving about Charlotte Flair. Baszler says, right, come on. No more distractions tonight. We had all that bollocks last week. We had the stuff that happened on SmackDown. Let's concentrate with it. With the bloody women's tag team champions. I mean, we've not got the belts around our waist or anything, but we're the women's tag team champions, all right? Let's concentrate. Some bloke shows up, gives Nia Jax some flowers. She says, oh, you shouldn't have Reginald. That's very kind of you. He goes, I didn't get you then. It's Angel Garza. Here he is. He wishes her luck. He kisses her hand. She's flustered. She's flattered. She walks through the back. She walks past Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke, who are making themselves look beautiful, I suppose. They were at a table with a vast amount of makeup on. And Nia Jax takes one look at her and just twats Mandy Rose with the flowers, shouting, put these into water, bitch. And then she walked off, and Mandy and Dana Brooke did nothing. They just stood there.
They've got a prank, haven't they? If I give you best material, I'll give you some good material. I'm bored of this show.
More talking. Strowman's pumping some iron back with the resistance bands. MVP comes up to him. Strowman is psychic. He just sort of goes, he speaks to him before even recognizing he's there. He said, bless you, got some shit in me. Shit in my face. That's how he talks, isn't it?
I know. He's like T-Ball.
After I beat Drew McIntyre tonight, it's good enough to stop me. Sorry, I can't hear you. It's good enough to stop me becoming champion of WWE Backlash. Sorry, WrestleMania Backlash. Anyway, let's see who the goobers are that are being fed to the newly formed team of RK Bro. Oh. Cedric Alexander, Shelton Benjamin, thanks for coming, lads. Thanks for trying so hard. They battered him in like 5 minutes. As I said, this was, I think, 50-odd minutes I saw somewhere since the last match actually happened.
That's good news. Do you know why? It means we're deeper into the podcast than I thought.
I can tell you're saving the skip for just the whenever possible. Orton hit Shelton Benjamin with a power slam, set up for an RKO, but Riddle gave him the heads up about Alexander coming off the top, who got hit with a huge RKO. Orton sets Benjamin up for that draping DDT. Riddle looks like the happiest little boy in the world when he sees what's about to happen. Excitedly begs Orton for a tag. Orton tags him, hits the DDT. Riddle hits the floating bro. 1, 2, 3. RK Bro are victorious. Riddle wants to hug him. Orton obviously isn't a fan. He walks up the ramp, but he smirks a little bit and he thinks, hey, you all right?
Usual Riddle stuff, caveat, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's as hard to emotionally invest, it just is. There's something to this act. There actually is.
Yeah.
It's the most interesting thing I've seen Randy Orton do in some time, but the curve is incredibly generous. Incredibly generous. Creative is nothing for the Fiend, by the way. I find that hilarious. However, like, it's funny because when you've, again, it's just the AEW effect. It makes this show even more unwatchable than it is. When you watch a TV show that tends to get tag team wrestling, like, incredibly right. Just saw one of the best tag team wrestling matches I've ever seen a couple of weeks ago on Dynamite, for example. You start to really appreciate that which they give you. So I'm really into my tag team wrestling. Again, it's wonderful. you get bang into the hot tags. Who's got the best one? Is it Phoenix? Is it Nick Jackson? Jungle Boy's up there as well. Cash Wheeler's awesome at it as well, because the first thing he does is, right, what's the quickest way I can win the match and be awesome doing so? Oh, what I'll do is I'll explode across the ring and just murder someone off the apron. There's an art to the hot tag. The hot tag is just a wonderful thing. Randy Orton's hot tag was so boring. It just about warranted hot, which means it's the best in-ring stuff Randy Orton's done all year. But like, gets into the ring, I gets the guy, I puts him against the turnbuckle, and he just starts punching them. Is that all you got? Hot tag sucks, mate. Yeah, I don't hate putting them two together. I really don't.
Yeah.
But it's just funny to me that even the hot tag, which is like an explosion of babyface fire, which effectively built, you're desperate to see, because you're just, the anticipation makes you want to see someone clean house. So possibly one of the easiest things to, it's one of the easiest platforms in wrestling. It's not one of the easiest things to do, obviously, on this evidence. It's one of the easiest platforms to do something that gets people jazzed. And Randy Orton just started punching someone in the corner. Can't even do that well. You can't even excite me doing a hot tag. So that was amusing, if you don't like Randy Orton very much, which I don't. Yeah, but I don't hate them together in terms of their personalities and the dynamic there.
Six women tag match came next. Michael Cedric, do you remember in NXT when Shayna Baszler and Rhea Ripley had that brilliant feud that was the one that won NXT, arguably the only, I think it was, the only Wednesday Night War head-to-head that they actually beat AEW Dynamite on? Yeah, now they're just mates now. They're just, yeah, throw Chuck that in the bin. Who needs that? Rhea Ripley was teaming with Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax to take on Asuka, Naomi and Lana. And I looked at this and went, right, if they don't win, regardless of shenanigans, then the women's division's done. Because not only have you got three current champions, you've got former world champions against, yes, Asuka, and to a certain extent, Naomi, SmackDown Women's Champion, of course. But the lead weight that is Lana. So that bit where she rolled up Rhea Ripley, I went, don't you fucking dare. Like, it was ridiculous. But the match is only half of what we need to discuss. So at one point, Ripley's working over Lana. There they come, the old pranksters. Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke, they come out. Shayna Baszler's like, no, I've seen this enough. I'm not having this. She goes to walk up to them on the ramp. And then this has to have been accidental. I think they were just meant to you know, doink, hoy some water at her. What they did was throw a bucket of water right at her. And when I say the bucket of water, I don't mean the water that was in the bucket. I mean bucket and all, just straight at Shayna Baszler. So that bounces off her. She still sells it. I'm like, oh, I'm all wet. And then Nia Jax comes through. And guess what? Once again, Michael Cedric, she fell flat on her in her ass. She fell flat on her. Actually, she fell flat on her face, actually. Because she comes over, whoa, I fell over. And then I was like, oh God, that was so crap and dumb. And then they were like, Vince was like, in the back, Rocky, what I want you to do is fall over and then lose all ability to get back up and have to be dragged out of the water like you're in a bloody lake or something by Reginald. And that'll send us into the break and that'll keep people hooked over the break. Oh. Will Nia Jax be able to even stand up? Find out as Raw rolls on.
Has Nia Jax drowned? I'm telling you now, Nia Jax is a lethal combination of danger unto herself. Why would you add water to that mix? It's like putting water next to some exposed wires. Why would you like... really dangerous. Like, don't put water on her. Don't put water on her. Like, she might slip and, like, it's already clumsy. It's absolutely negligent.
But it's Partridge, isn't it? Nia Jax wrestles on Monday Night Raw. What a way to book her.
What a way to endanger your opponents.
So, as I said, current women's tag team champions and current Raw Women's Champion needed a distraction. Reginald hops up on there. That distracts Naomi. Jax just runs over. Ripley runs in, slams Naomi. Asuka breaks up the cover. Ripley gets rid of her. In the midst of all this, Naomi's gets given the Riptide, but she's made a blind tag to Lana. And I thought, oh my God, they're going to have Lana pin the Raw Women's Champion. Like I said, she hits a flying crossbody on Rhea Ripley. She gets a two count on a crucifix pin, and then Ripley just gets up and goes, right, enough of all this. Riptide tags Jax in. Jax does her inexplicable leg drop cover where she somehow doesn't gain any height on the leg drop, and they win and they pose with their titles. I suppose it was the right result if we're being generous. That's all I can say about this match.
I just wouldn't put your champion in the orbit of this awful comedy, nor would I have her ruled up by Lana with the visual threat of, oh, that's a level. I just did nothing for no one, least of all me.
Well, it did something for Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke, because they were backstage yucking it up about how good their prank was when Sonya Deville walked in and went, pretty unprofessional, that, guys. And then they sort of alluded to her history with Mandy Rose. She says, I'm not surprised by your actions, Mandy, your questionable taste. That's all I'll say. Anyway, Sonya Deville announces that Mandy Rose is going to face Charlotte Flair later on tonight. And then we got to the highlight, Michael Sidgwick of Monday Night Raw. Alexa's Playground!
Oh my God, oh my God.
So Alexa says, oh, you know, you can be a creepy evil bastard like me. All you have to do is think some evil thoughts. We all have them. We all have them, Michael Sidgwick. You have to just...
Don't you think some
Shut up! Someone tweeted me the other day saying, you know, you can change it so you don't have to say, you know, if you say her name, it won't pop up. And I was like, no, that's letting the Echo Dot win. I'm not letting Jeff Bezos win this war. So anyway, Little Miss Bliss is there going, oh, we've all got these dark thoughts. And then
apparently... Yeah, I know they have. She's talking to the right people.
Apparently, Lily's also fucking Beetlejuice, because you have to say her name three times.
Yeah. Candyman and Beetlejuice. It's had a lot of wang in it.
And then, I'll tell you what, they got me here. Well, actually, they didn't, because no one cares and no one actually watches and pays attention to them when they're not raw. But they were like, oh, relax. So think of the waterfalls and relaxing bollocks and peace and blah, blah, blah. And then Lily went, aah! And I went, oh, you stupid bastard.
You stupid bitch.
And then, Bliss said,
Lily made me do it.
And I just hated my life even more.
Well, listen, Lily's been there the whole time.
I was searching to see what...
Alexa Bliss has played babyface before, so she can't possibly have been there the whole time.
I'll say this, the one place she hasn't been the whole time, because I searched to see what people were saying about Raw off the back of it. She wasn't on the WWE porn clip that I saw, so, you know, she's not been there the whole time, let's be honest.
Here's the thing, right, about this atrocity of a segment. Right? Jump scares are so prevalent in horror films because they are so easy to do, right? They are piss easy to do, right? I could go into Tesco, right? The supermarket, right? And some old granny is like, getting the apples, getting the pears, right? Getting maybe some grapes as well. And I go, ah! Right? It would honestly just be, she might get a heart attack and die, but you know, that's why I wouldn't do it. It's just an example I'm illustrating for the purposes of explaining why this is so bad, right? It is so easy to do. The whole idea is you create some jarring empty space. You let the space and the silence register, or you create the most mundane scene imaginable, like a argument in a car, and then bang, jump scare,
yeah.
Right? It's easy to do. It's why the hacks who make the worst of modern horror, like some modern horror, but the hacks of modern horror mainstream do jump scares because they're pissy. This was a rubbish attempt at a jump scare. Like, there was no I don't know what there was in an attempt at the jarring, like the juxtaposition between the tranquil imagery and then the scary doll doing a loud noise. And the noise wasn't scary enough. No. I honestly didn't budge. And I'm not just trying to be a big man. Oh, knee effect. When we used to punch each other on the arm at school. Like, did you used to do that at school when you used to punch your mate? And then the sound, oh, knee effect. Yeah. I didn't hit. Yeah, that's how you do it. I sat there, scat, knee effect. It had no effect on me whatsoever. I didn't jump or go. I would have given them that if they'd done it, you know, and I would have described it as, oh, well, it's not good horror. It's horror cliche with the names of the three baddies, the monsters. But, you know, at least they didn't scare me at all. It was rubbish.
Speaking of rubbish, Charlotte Flair and Mandy Rose was next. Yeah. Oh, thank Christ. Charlotte got angry because there was a completely legitimate normal two count. Rose got a schoolboy kicked out. Charlotte ate natural selection and won. And she was just horrible to Arengo again. Awful. But enough of all that. It's now time for this.
It's short. It's crap. It's wrestling related. The five-star review.
Nailed it! Yeah. And this week's five-star review is brought to you by Ant Powell. If you want your name associated with a five-star review, all you need to do is subscribe to What Culture Wrestling. Leave us a five-star review on iTunes and suggest something short, crap, and wrestling-related. As Ant Powell did, Ant writes, I don't want to say too much, just thank you to all the staff that work at What Culture for getting us through the pandemic with the perfect mix of entertainment, knowledge, banter, and tearing WWE to shreds. Not sure if this counts as crap, but could you review Scott Steiner's promo eviscerating Ric Flair on Nitro in February 2000? I just want to hear Wilborn try and get through this promo without getting the podcast cancelled. Cheers, lads. Sige, take us back to 2000 Nitro. And, well, if you can, I don't think you really can, but give us a basis for this promo.
Basis for this promo is that Scott Steiner, completely unto himself, decided to, and that's the perfect word, and thank you for your support, eviscerate Ric Flair because he just wanted to and he didn't like him. And the best thing about this is such a great collision of two horrendous WCW like philosophies or whatever you like to call it, colliding together so spectacularly that they contrive to make something good. You've got just a complete lack of conviction in anyone not named Hogan, Flair, or whatever to like really be, or anyone not named Hogan, but he punches down on Flair because Flair got the brunt of Hogan as well. Versus just systemic cowardly management who were just barely there and didn't care, were utterly inept, incompetent, and they just looked at Scott Steiner and thought, oh, he's a bit scary, he can just do what he wants. And there were attempts to reprimand him, but nothing that he took seriously because he just continued to do things as was his wont. And I love Scott Steiner so much. I love this so much. It's not crap remotely. I guess it's crap in that I didn't really inform anything, it didn't build anything. But it's
not people change the channel to WWF.
legendary. Yeah, it was like, it didn't get anyone over this. It got Scott Steiner over in my heart, but it didn't really get him over, unfortunately. But it was just one of the best manifestations of WCW's institutional idiocy.
Yeah.
I adore this. It shouldn't have happened, but I'm so glad it did. Just typical, the inmates are running the asylum and the hardest one just cut a funny promo.
My favourite thing about all this as well is normally when we get these things, I'll sit there and write meticulous notes on what's being said. I thought, this is such a legendary thing. I wonder if anyone's already, you know, done my job for me and saved me a bit of time. Not only has someone done it for me, Michael Sidgwick, but it's genius. You know, the place where you normally go to find out like song lyrics and details behind them. They're like, well, this is up there with the greatest song lyrics of all time. So yeah, Scott Steiner gets on the mic, says, as you can see, when Big Papa Pump comes to town, all my hoochies come around. But it's just a damn shame we have to leave LA and come to this cesspool called Tulsa.
Ooh.
That's a bit of heat. I also like the commentators going, You know what you get if you spell Tulsa backwards. Huh. It's a slut. That's just if you're struggling there. That's what you get.
God, this promo.
But last night when I was kicking it in the booty,
proving anal sex,
proving I was the daddy, that I was the king of the night. But I'm not one to brag. He's going to make a statement and then he changes his mind. Medesia, Kim, why don't you tell him what it was like to be with the... Hang on, before I even finish.
Kicking it in the booty, yo. Last time I was kicking it in your asshole.
I'm going to stop here and say, not only to the YouTube comments I'm going to read out later and not reflect the views of myself, Michael Sidgwick, Michael Hanford, the Daddy Boys, anyone at What Culture Wrestling. This promo also doesn't, because he says, Medesia, Kim, why don't you tell him what it was like to be with the Purple Warrior? Sitch, you want to do the genius analysis of what the Purple Warrior is?
The subtext means it's the Purple Warrior is Scott Steiner's cack. It's huge cack.
Yeah, huge cack. And Medesia says, oh, big papa pump. You understand any man between the sheets, honey? Kim, why don't you tell him what he's really like? And Kim says, oh, that's right. And then completely botches this. Big papa pump's not... And he's our Superman. And Steiner reveals a Superman t-shirt. Stan said, you can't.
He's not Enzo Amore.
Everyone eventually, all roads lead to Enzo. You're damn straight. So this goes out to all my freaks out there. Big Papa is your hookup. Holla, if you hear me. And then the music plays in the promo. No, of course it doesn't. That's not the end. That's the beginning. Now, last week, I was watching TV and I watched a 53-year-old man come out of here who has more loose skin than a Sharpei puppy come out of here and say he's still the man.
Destroyed. Just destroyed him. Destroyed him with one line. He didn't know. He could have just went home then.
Yeah. I seen Ric Flair, the number two, the Nature Boy, come out here, who's been the butt end of all the jokes because he's supposed to be the limousine riding, jet flying son of a gun. But I'm saying one time you should have took a cab and used that money to fix your crooked yellow teeth. He's great, this.
Fantastic, man.
One time, you should have took a cab. So I had to ask myself, if WCW was going to hire the Nature Boy number two, why wouldn't they hire the Nature Boy? And he realizes he's botched that. Why wouldn't they hire the Nature Boy, the original Nature Boy, Buddy Rogers? Now I know that Buddy Rogers is dead. Not laughing at you. Yeah,
you know. It's just a wonderful answer to his own question.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you hire that guy? Yeah, I mean, I know he's dead, but you know.
He's still got nice, better teeth.
Yeah. Now I know that Buddy Rogers is dead, God rest his soul. But Ric Flair, your career is dead. And I know as he lays 6 feet under, he's still styling and profiling. Because when you used your little brain and stole his name, there's one thing that you couldn't steal, and that was his class.
It was all about clusters, Big Scott, yes.
Yeah. So when you walked down that aisle last week, I wasn't alone because the people at home, all they did was grab the remote and change the channel to the WWF and watch Stone Cold, a person you and your old friends got fired from here because you're a jealous old bastard.
Jealous old bastard. He's at once. He creates a wonderful mental picture to Scott Steiner because I've just got an image of like a grade Sharpei puppy like close to death under the porch. Like, it's wonderful.
And you previously had a Sharpei puppy you liked more, and you've just dressed this one up to look like the previous one.
Yeah.
So Ric Flair, remember this. In this wrestling business, there's never been a bigger ass-kissing, butt-sucking bastard.
Butt-sucking bastard.
He's inimitable in terms of the sort of tangents, just very brief tangents he goes on. So he says, there's never been a bigger ass-kissing, butt-sucking bastard in this business, but also in life. You're the biggest ass-kissing, backstabbing, butt-sucking bastard, and you belong where you're at in WCW. Checks notes. Yes, this is an episode of Nitro. Yeah. You belong where you're at in WCW because WCW sucks, and so do you. Me, I'm just going to stay right here in the NWO for life.
Just immortal, absolutely immortal patter, utterly counterproductive. Just wonderful. Absolutely, I love this. So, Scott Steiner is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, unironically and ironically. Every single thing I like about professional wrestling, the theater, the hard bastards doing like legitimate looking things, the spectacular things, the legitimately good promos, the unintentionally bad promos. Everything I like about professional wrestling forms the career of Scott Steiner. He is everything that Michael Hanford thinks about Kevin Nash, I think about Scott Steiner.
So we go to the comments. Once again, these do not reflect the views of myself, Michael Sidgwick, the Dudley Boys, or anyone at What Culture Wrestling. I have to say, Ratik Magana hits the nail on the head. LMAO. Man, Scott Steiner was like the Duke Nukem of wrestling. That's the perfect embodiment of him.
Yes, just like his absolute caricature of badass, and yet so badass that he gets away with it.
Yeah. Abaddon Wolf writes, Scott Steiner is the reason promos are scripted in pro wrestling.
Seriously, it's probably not that far from the truth. Like his ilk terrified Vince McMahon. Like these loose cannons apparently that they can't trust in. He's the loosest one, other than Pillman, of course.
Ingram quotes him, I watched a 53-year-old man come out here with more loose skin than a Shar-Pei puppy, and just writes, time is a cruel mistress, isn't it, Scott?
I mean, yes, but also, like, Scott Steiner did the business in TNA. He did the business of trying to put people over in TNA, so
yeah,
no any of the same. I'm an apologist, of course.
Charzinho, of course, we have to have this. Steiner, unscripted on the mic, surrounded by two hot women in skimpy clothing, talking about boning other wrestlers' wives. Lol, that would call a Twitter SJW meltdown. Miss the old days.
It's going so well before you invoked the dreaded initials.
Yeah. Myrtle writes, hey, those WCW women were hot, kissing on his shoulders and biceps.
Kissing on them. Is that Marty Jannetty's burner?
But I also like that. I also got, you mentioned this because I like to comment from someone underneath. I wish they did that to me, but I'm a blob. Scott would rip me apart.
Call it like you see it. Like a bit honesty, me.
And the final comment here comes, I've kept it relatively clean. James and Patrick writes, huh, Medeja and Kim, eh? The ratings just went up. In my pants.
Just like my cock.
Oh, God. So thanks once again to Ant Powell. That was a great one, Ant. Good pick. If you want to suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related, although if Mr. Steiner is listening, we're not saying you're any of those things. Yeah, instead of a god-awful Monday Night Raw segment, subscribe to What Culture Wrestling and leave us a five-star review. And as if that wasn't good enough, Michael Sidgwick, we've hit the main event. Braun Strowman, Drew McIntyre, we're here. We've nearly finished. Get in.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
So early on, Strowman goes out, goes to do his run around the ring thing, and I think, oh, here it comes. Here's the train noise. Bloody Lashley music hits, doesn't it? And no wonder he's a heel. Ruins up that moment. That takes us into a break. Lashley's watching on from ringside, et cetera, et cetera. Strowman's in control. McIntyre fights back, hits this wild overhead belly-to-belly suplex. McIntyre goes for a claymore, but Strowman catches him and hits a powerbomb. McIntyre headbutts Strowman, hits a spinebuster. I did like the bit where they hit superplex and then Strowman grabs McIntyre by the head. And I think he said, I'm a monster. We want to hit him in the chest. I'm not sure. And I'm not going to go back and watch.
He did.
So Strowman sets up for a power slam, but Lashley distracts the referee because he didn't want it to be a triple threat. Lashley distracts the referee. MVP pulls McIntyre off Strowman's shoulders and McIntyre hits a future shock DDT. McIntyre is setting up in the corner for a claymore. In comes T-Bar and Mace, who must not be a part of the Hurt Business because if they are, they've just messed up their boss's plan. He fights them off. That allows Strowman to snatch him out of the air. Running power slam. 1, 2, 3. Braun Strowman wins. It is now a triple threat at WrestleMania Backlash. Lashley, McIntyre, and Strowman. A big development to close Monday Night Raw, which is what they'll try and sell us on next week, I suppose.
Well, I guess, I mean, look, this was probably a reasonable hoss fight. I simply was in no mood to watch.
No.
And the idea of a hoss fight is that you're meant to think of these big badasses just like beating each other up and it's meant to be a bit of fun, and Strowman's just too much of a cartoon to like embody like the gnarly like machismo that's running through all this. He's just like a cartoon, so I can't stomach it. But I was in no mood, so I'm probably underplaying. Maybe it was fun. Honestly, I can't remember, if I'm being perfectly honest.
Like you say, by that point, I was just done. I was just like...
But that's the problem. It's like the storytelling and everything, all the bollocks are so bad that everything that... It's all meant to inform how much you like the match. That's why they call them promotions. And they did such a bad job of being a promotion that I thus could not care about the match. It's funny how that goddamn works. Yeah. I've got a few other things to add, other than it's hilarious how they have committed to calling something WrestleMania Backlash and have grown so impatient at their own rubbish creative direction that it no longer feels remotely like WrestleMania. So I find that funny. But ultimately, on a fundamental level, we're long past trying to analyze this in good faith at face value, because I mean, I personally deem it unworthy of it. I know you're more generous and you probably do on the SmackDown. Everyone knows Raw sucks. And there's no Jekyll and Hyde, in my opinion. SmackDown's almost as bad. It's just rated generously on a curve. But if you were still inclined to analyze these shows on who did they get over, what matches did they do a good job of building, all of those, just for me, antiquated concepts, this show did such a rubbish job of preserving the appeal and the aura and the credibility of Drew McIntyre, who's already been on the slide. Him losing clean in the middle at WrestleMania did him no favours whatsoever. You got your first indication then of how they've gone off him. To be fair, it took them longer than they take to go off most guys. And then he's losing twice on the same episode of Raw, in a show that they are clearly telling you, right, you're bored of Drew versus Lashley. We are aware of that. So here's a spare part to make it slightly more interesting for you. Mm-hmm. I could not have left this Raw with a lesser opinion of Drew McIntyre. It feels like they just don't trust him in the spot. They don't want him to be the top guy. It's a shame. Like, at least just be a benevolent company. Like, even if you do the odd nice thing, it probably means more than a big match considering they haven't got any more of them. Could they not, if they were so determined to strap up Lashley, could they not have just had Drew win? Just win one. Because I just think of him as, like, he's over as a main event concern at this point.
God, I just found this tweet that I think sums it up perfectly. Whoever tweeted this was heaping praise on the Impact Wrestling pay-per-view main event just a day ago. Since WWE fans can't even say what they like about Raw without mentioning something entirely irrelevant next to a cry laugh emoji, let's just use that as a rating system. This week's Raw gets half an emoji out of 10, just the solitary tear to represent how I feel on the inside.
And that was me. And you can follow me at M. Sidgwick on Twitter.
It was absolutely spot on. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. Let us know your thoughts on this dreadful episode of Monday Night Raw. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts. Later on today, myself and Sid sitting down to preview NXT after today it was revealed that the winner of the Wednesday Night War is apparently hockey. Right, this has been the Raw Review. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thanks once again to, I've forgotten his name off the top of my head now, I do apologise, to Ant Powell, who suggested this week's five-star review. Suggested one yourself. Subscribe to What Culture Wrestling. He was a five-star review on iTunes and suggest something short, crap and wrestling-related. But as I said, this has been the Raw Review. My thanks to Sidge. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.